Good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet and I am here in the studio. Oh, no, I'm not here in the studio with anybody. The late Patty Fink is not here yet. We'll see if she is. If she does come this morning, and of course she will, but we haven't heard from her. Anyway, so we're just going to be here in the studio, just the three of us talking. I'm talking to Sister Bertha and Sister Ophelia. They're with the DFW Sisters. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And I'm glad you got fully dressed for this, but this is radio, and you didn't have to fully doll up today.
Well, that would have saved us.
Glitter.
Would have saved us a few hours.
Would have saved you. Now, explain what the DFW Sisters is.
We are basically a chapter of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, based in San Francisco. It's a worldwide order. We basically are gay nuns. We're not all members are gay, but we're here for the gay community mostly. We go around passing out condoms and lube and having a good time and just making sure that everybody is, enjoying life and we're spreading joy. And, that's at the heart of it. But then there's the serious side of education and, just helping out the community, fundraising, that kind of thing.
So spreading joy. You're just like regular nuns. You spread joy.
Exactly.
And that stigmatic guilt.
The reason that we had you on today is tomorrow is World AIDS Day.
Right.
Yeah. And AIDS education really is one of the big missions of the sisters.
Yes.
What's going on tomorrow for World AIDS Day? And we'll talk about this a little bit more throughout the show.
We'll be going around the Metroplex with the Veil of Remembrance, letting people sign names, dates, memories on it. We'll be starting out here in Dallas with a stop at Resource Center. Then we plan on going over to JPS in Fort Worth. For their health fair, and then back here to Dallas downtown for the celebration vigil at the Main Street Park, and then on to Cedar Springs and going through the bars and letting people sign it.
Yeah, you're saying sign the Veil of Remembrance. Tell us, what is the Veil of Remembrance exactly?
The Veil of Remembrance is this year, what did you say, 4 yards mm-hmm. of fabric that Sister Ophelia will be wearing as her veil that night. It basically, we will have Sharpies, and it gives you an opportunity to write either names and dates of people who have passed on or memories of those people, and then we keep the veil. We protect it. It stays in our archives for ever. We're, you know, we don't
display
do
maybe at other events.
Exactly. And, okay. Yeah. Maybe at a later date.
Okay. So when you first hear the Veil of Remembrance, you can write a name. You can write a date of somebody who died. It sounds yeah. Very nice. Very nice. But it has a much bigger impact than that.
And for some people, they're kind of, whatever about it. And then when they discover that, they can sign it, put that memory of a loved one on there, they can become very emotional. Mm-hmm. It will finally hit them. And it's, you know, the memory. Mm-hmm. There's power in that memory. That way we never forget.
And you know something? It's very similar to the quilt. And for anybody who doesn't know what the quilt is a project where people put together 3-foot by 6-foot panels in remembrance of somebody, and they can it can basically be anything, but it remembers a person or a group of people who died, and usually you sew on their name, very often the dates, and then something about them, so that you remember who they are. And I know I thought, oh, yeah, the quilt. Yeah, I don't sew. I'm not going to do a quilt. But then I was in Washington, D.C. when the quilt was being displayed, and my partner's quilt was there.
Mm.
And, oh, God.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a mess that weekend. you know, and kept going back to it, and you know, it's just really emotional. Mm-hmm. The Veil of Remembrance, though, is something that's very similar in intent, but it doesn't take as much work to do, in a way.
Right.
But somebody might go up and write a name, and you said this as we were talking before, and then go away, then come back.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens?
Bertha was talking about that.
We basically, it's almost like priming a tip jar when you first start, because when you first lay it out on a table, it's just a blank canvas, and you've got all these Sharpies and people kind of standing around looking at you funny, and nobody wants to be that first person. So we, last year, several of us went in and we started writing, just started with names and dates, and then would write a memory. And we kind of stood around and waited, and finally people would kind of inch up and ask permission to write on it. Mm-hmm. And they would start off with a name and go away for a little bit, and you could see them getting kind of emotional or watching from a distance as other people were writing. And they would come back again and write a little bit more, write memories around that name, and then start to get emotional, leave, come back. And it went on like that for a few hours. And, you know, it was amazing to see how many people who had no intention of ever going up to the quilt suddenly had, you know, a list of 10, 15, 20 names, and, you know, were crying, very emotional, and, you know, it really opened them up. And so it's something very special to see. Mm-hmm. And witness.
And then you have the ones that become so emotionally emotional over it that they can't write the name. And I was asked several times throughout the evening and day to write a name and a date or a memory to go with it. Mm-hmm. And so the veil last year is tear-stained, mm-hmm. truly.
You also have a veil of tears.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Will you have that tomorrow or no?
No.
No, okay, because tomorrow's just all about World AIDS Day.
Right.
Tell us what the veil of tears is that you do.
The veil of tears, or the veil of shame, is a veil that we'll wear that we first did last year, October 10th, with all the bullying, suicide events that were happening across the world. And as a way of writing the hateful things that have been said to you, that have happened to you, and we carry those burdens. We carry that shame for you, and then we ceremonially burn that to release that energy, that negativity. And that is such a powerful veil and experience for me as mistress of ceremonies to carry that, because, you know, I'm seeing what's being written on here. And I thought I had been, you know, called some hurtful things, but seeing that written that had happened to other people, mine was a cakewalk.
Mm-hmm. That must be really powerful to see. I mean, it's just pure hate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And when we laid it out to actually have the ceremony to burn it, we laid it out to discuss it and kind of have a little ritual or ceremony about it. And all of us sitting there holding hands, reading, you know, just reading these horrible words and letting go of that and releasing that energy, that was a very emotional moment for all of us. Mm-hmm. And the burning of that veil, we stayed until every last little inch of that thing was ash. Mm-hmm. And which we do keep. We keep the ashes of it. But all that energy's gone.
You know, and that's so important. Over Thanksgiving, I had dinner with a big group of friends. About 20 of us got together. And I had just gotten back from my high school reunion. And I was talking about what a wonderful experience it is, how I was surprised how many people in my high school class had come out, but those of us who were gay, those who were straight, we all just, everybody was just getting along, had a wonderful time in high school. None of us really had been bullied. We got along then, although everybody had their little groups, but mm-hmm. this was different because about 150 people came, and everybody was talking to everybody, and people who were just, you know, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And I realized how lucky I was, because at Thanksgiving, some people were talking about some of this hate that they'd experienced. And I said to them, you know, sometimes you just have to let it go. I said, that happened to you 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go. And, you know, and some people can't. I mean, right. I'm more the type of person, as something happens, I don't care. You know, it's like, that's your problem. That hatred, that must be a burden to be, and it's such a waste of time to be so hating on other people.
Yeah.
But some people do internalize it a lot more than mm-hmm. I do, and carry it with them.
Well, and that reminds me of a woman who was there and when we were doing the volunteers, and because we did it in a parking lot that night, and she, after reading several of the things that were on there, it sparked things that she had forgotten. Mm-hmm. And she came up afterwards very emotional and just said, I didn't even realize that was still there, that I was still holding on to that. And writing that out allowed her to let go of that. Mm-hmm. And so there's these things that we hold on to that we don't even realize we're holding on to until somebody else brings it up.
Well, so, and we see it come from a lot of different places.
Right.
If there are words that maybe a family member said to you.
Right.
That can be really powerful. But also, I guess it's a matter of geography, too.
Mm-hmm.
Where you live, who you grew Absolutely. Up with, who's around you, who's saying those words.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know. And do you see a lot of straight people or allies and friends
yeah.
who come?
Oh, absolutely.
Did they write things?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
That they've experienced?
And so, and that's the thing, too, is to see that it's also, it's not just tied to being gay. It's a shared experience that, you know, across the board. And so, yeah, we had a lot of comments and things written on there from straight people. Mm-hmm. So
that's interesting.
We're talking to Sister Bertha and Sister Ophelia. They're from the DFW Sisters, a group that has a lot of fun. However, they have a very serious mission. Also, a lot of it has to do with spreading word about HIV and AIDS, spreading word about getting rid of hatred. And so what they do is also very serious in sort of a mocking sort of way. Sort of.
Sort of.
Now, when people see you, for anybody who can't see the way they're dressed today because they...
It is radio. Yeah.
It is. Just explain how you appear when you make your appearances. How long does that take also?
Well, when we first started, it would take us between three, four hours to get into habit. We're now getting to the point where we can do it in an hour, hour and a half. There is what we call a sacred white face, and it's a mask. Even though it's it's bright, colorful, or a reflection of our community, but people can. There's a what is the word I want? Anonymity.
Anonymity?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I need more coffee.
It's early.
It's early.
Right. People will come up to you and tell you some of their deepest, darkest secrets. If I was in a bar in, as I call it, boy mode, you know, they wouldn't come up to me and go, you know, my partner's beating me or whatever. But as a sister with the white face, they will all of a sudden just unload on you from, you know, it being domestic problems to substance abuse,
suicide, depression, just all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly you're an instant confessional.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Right. And it usually happens about 1 o'clock in the morning after they've had plenty to drink, and they get the courage, and the walls are down, and it's somebody who would still sit in a corner normally and not talk to anybody. They feel they can come up to us and tell us everything.
Was that something that you were expecting when you first formed your group?
We had heard about it from other sisters around the country. They call them sister moments. But we also, in the very beginning, we didn't know how Dallas would embrace us anyway. So we had very little expectation as far as that goes. I think every time it happens, it surprises us. We've had quite a number of them. We've got a couple of sisters that are just magnets for it. And, it really is just about every time we go out, it will happen to somebody.
Do you absolve them? Do you have some sort of right that you go through to make them feel like
we'll tell them, that's not what we do. We can't absolve you of this. Here's where you can get help. These are some people, and we'll make phone calls if we need to. But you can confess it to us. But, one of my favorite quotes is, absolution comes from confession. And, so to me, that's they're absolving themselves of it.
You're saying absolving, but in some cases, these are people who really do need a referral.
Yes, absolutely. And we do have a list of people we can call. Organizations, names we can give them, things like that. So
yeah, I mean, if somebody's in the middle of a domestic violence situation,
right,
you need to get them out of that situation somehow. And you're maybe somebody in your group is, but you're not all trained counselors.
No, absolutely not. But we know who to call, who to go to. We did have at one of our big events, we had somebody who was suicidal. And we were able to get them, a couple of different people, that night at that event to come down there and help them. We've got some people on speed dialed it.
Well, and certainly somebody who's suicidal, just having somebody to talk to.
Right.
Right.
Until they're getting some professional help.
And that was one thing is, if a sister had to go somewhere else to make me make that phone call to find somebody, somebody else came over to sit with them and talk. And so there were never less than 3 sisters with that person at that time. We weren't letting them go anywhere.
Well, so. And one of the main reasons that somebody is going to commit suicide at that moment is loneliness.
Yeah, absolutely.
So not letting that person go, not letting that person do something dangerous in itself is certainly the right thing to do to help that person. We're talking to Sister Bertha, Sister Ophelia from the DFW Sisters, part of the organization, the national organization called the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We'll be back with more right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now's the time to make your pledge count. Send your pledge to KNON, P.O. Box 710-909, Dallas, Texas 75371. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. KNON, Box 710-909, Dallas, Texas 75371. Be sure to put the name of the show you're supporting on the check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON's pledge drive, call 214-828-9500, extension 234.
Oh, yeah, it's the boss of the people. KNON.
KNON thanks Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERImaging.com.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taff, and I'm here with Patty Fink. We're talking to Sister Bertha and Sister Ophelia there with the DFW sisters. You know, Patty, I realize in the almost 30 years we've been on the air, this is the second time we've had nuns on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the other one was Sister Janine Gramick, who is a Catholic nun who started a ministry that's worked for gay and lesbian rights for 30 or 40 years now. And I did introduce her as my second favorite nun after the flying nun. I did ask her, I don't know if you remember, one of my first questions to her was if she had ever flown, and she said no. So I need to ask the two of you also. And she's an actual, like, Catholic nun. So I can't, like, have you ever tried flying?
You know, in the early stages, I think we did. All of our different coronets, which is our headpiece, all the different... Wimples or cornet, it just depends on the style of it and region and area and all that. But we tried so many different styles. And so, yeah, I think a few were, we were trying to figure out how to fly. So we did actually pattern a couple after the flying nun.
That
we really, yes, we really wanted that look. But then we realized that's really hard to take pictures in and... You know,
and just
go within a bar.
And, people.
Exactly.
So, and then practicality over flying.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to meet a real flying nun.
Give us a good windstorm here in Texas.
We
could be able to get one up.
Apparently, we're just going to have Sally Field.
Yeah, there
apparently.
You go.
That's going to be the solution. She'll know.
And I think that's true. The DFW sisters have a number of, they do lots of fun things, but some very serious, a very serious side to them. And one of them, we were just talking about some sister moments, but also tomorrow is World AIDS Day, and they're participating in several of the events. Things that are going on tomorrow, downtown at 7 p.m., there's going to be a big remembrance in Main Street Gardens. Which is right next to Momentum Tower Place. What's it called?
The Mercantile?
Mercantile Building, thank you. I'm confusing Mercantile Bank's building with their ad from 30 years ago.
Yes, you are.
I am. Just shows what century I'm living in. But the other thing's going on tomorrow... in Plano, the community Unitarian Church up in Plano is having a remembrance in the afternoon. John Peter Smith Hospital over in Fort Worth is doing something. Do you know what time that is?
I believe it's 1 to 4.
And big health fair. And there's also going to be some free testing.
Yes.
At Cathedral of Hope,
I think at Cathedral of Hope, yes.
And
I think they're going to have some... AIDS quilt panels and free testing as well.
The AIDS panels, as well as the Veil of Remembrance that you do, do you find that there's a generational split between old people like Patty and younger people who really just have a different view of what AIDS is?
We're finding that the younger people don't even know what the quilt is.
They have no clue.
Yeah, which is appalling, actually, to me. It's surprising because there's so much of our history tied up in that quilt. And for that to get lost to the next generations, that's a very sad to me. So yeah, we've done some explaining, a lot of explaining about the quilt, and that ties in a lot with our education of the younger generation of about AIDS and HIV, and because most of them are of a mind that they can live with it, and it's not going to hurt them, it's not going to kill them or anything like that.
They're just going to pop a pill and they'll be fine.
They'll take a pill and they're fine. They don't think about what those pills do to their bodies.
How many of them they have to take every day, multiple times a day.
Yeah, and you stop taking them, there's a whole mess of problems you get into, and they don't realize that. And I've even been told, I would rather just go ahead and get it so I don't have to worry about it.
Oh, and kidding.
No.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we had a little education. We're finding that they never saw people dying of AIDS. They never lost their friends. They never were going to multiple funerals a week. They just didn't see what it did to you and what it still does and what it still can do. They don't see that. So
I remember the first time I was talking to somebody at the AIDS Resource Center, and this is probably about 10 years ago, which was 3 or 4 years after the medications first came out, and people working at the AIDS Resource Center said they didn't know anybody who had died of AIDS.
Wow.
And that, on the one hand, horrified me. On the other hand, it was like, oh, but that's a good thing.
Right. It's this little weird catch-22. I mean, yay, we're not dying on a regular basis anymore, mm-hmm. but you become complacent. Mm-hmm. And then you have this whole generation growing up that don't see any repercussions to it.
Well, I was really shocked about the ignorance in our youth in general about our reality, the reality of our rights and our, you know, as they were in 2003, mm-hmm. when Lawrence v. Texas was before the Supreme Court and the decision came, and that day there was a big rally at the Resource Center with lots of different groups, big crowd, lots of television, because it was a Texas case.
Right.
And here we were in Texas. It's actually in Houston, but still was Texas. Very big decision. It changed our world as the GLBT community. And when we were done, my partner Aaron and I went down to the Strip and went into one of the bars there. And kind of on the corner where Hunky's used to be, mm-hmm. A TV camera had set up. They'd set one up on top of the roof to film the dancing in the streets. And, of course, there was none. So we go in, and we're talking to some of these young people. They didn't know anything about Section 2106. They didn't know anything about what that really meant, how it was used to criminalize all gay people in Texas. And it was just stunning. It was a slap in the face, mm-hmm. I felt, that they didn't know this stuff. But it's not just about HIV and AIDS, that a lot of young people are clueless, absolutely mm-hmm. clueless.
Just gay history in general.
And that's not even real history. I mean, it was overturned in 2003.
Right. But... You know, I'm appalled at the people who don't know what Stonewall is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how you can be gay and not know what Stonewall is. That just doesn't compute to me. So.
And it's like David said, you know, maybe it's a horrific thing, or maybe that's a good thing, that they feel they can live their lives and move on and not, you know, not be faced with anything that's happened in the past. And so recently in the past, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that... You know, people were getting triple carded and stuff in the bars, and bars are getting raided right here in Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it hasn't been that long. It really hasn't. Of course, you know, I do work elections, and election day we see, you know, these people come up, you know, and they must have been born past this date in, you know, 1990 or 91 or something. I just freak. You know? More than that now. I think it's 92 or 93. God. I'm like, you know what I was doing?
Yeah, you're doing Rick Perry math.
I realize.
You have to be 21 to vote, right?
Right.
21.
Right.
And you need to vote 6 days after Election Day.
Right.
That would be ideal. You know?
Right.
Oops.
But that's a whole nother show.
But, you know, speaking of, I remember seeing the quilt in the early 90s, it had come to Fort Worth. And so what a stunning experience. And fortunately for everyone who was moving through it very, very slowly, mm-hmm. Reading all the panels, taking it all in, there were, you know, boxes of tissue parked right. around this big kind of Coliseum floor. Mm-hmm. But it was incredibly moving. Just yeah. amazing.
I did the Lone Star Ride earlier this year, and mm-hmm. that raises money for the AIDS Resource Center, AIDS Services Dallas, and AIDS Outreach Center in Fort Worth. And for the closing ceremony, we had, I think, 10 panels of the quilt that were laid out. And the people from Cure, who are the ones who bring the quilt panels in, you know, I know them, and they saw I'm sitting in the front row, and everybody else is looking at the quilt. And I am just in tears. I mean, through the whole closing ceremony, I'm just... So, and everybody's looking at me, and like, so after the actual ceremony, I said, okay, come here. And I just grabbed a group of people, and I said, I want to tell you who this is.
Yeah.
You know, this panel, this is Cedar Springs. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the original owner of the Roundup, and this is the original owner of Hunkies, and this is the original owner of Tape Lender. And they're all right there on this one panel.
Wow.
Who nobody else knew from that group there. And let me tell you about this panel. And these are people who worked at the Resource Center. And I was going, and there were people from the Resource Center who were there. And I was explaining to them who these people were. And I'm just in tears. But I mean, that's the power that yeah, that can have.
Absolutely.
So.
And it was a period of time, you know, when people, you know, people we knew and loved and cared about were just dropping mm-hmm. right and mm-hmm. left.
Yeah. Well, the sisters. In, what was it, 84, the San Francisco house was approximately 20 members. And by the end of that year, they were down to four.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were seriously wondering if they were going to continue.
Right.
And
right.
thankfully, they did.
How did your group get going?
Getting
onto a happier note. We'll go back to miserable in just a few minutes. How did your group get going? Because the sisters out in California have been around for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. I'm from the West Coast, so I knew the sisters in San Francisco and Seattle. And when I moved to Dallas in 2000, I could see that there was a gap, that I knew what the sisters did, and so I had started back then trying to get the sisters here. It took 11 years to get the group the enough interest to move that forward.
How many members do you have now?
We are hovering around 26 total, and we have a waiting list, so we've got about 10 coming in. And as sisters are at a stage where they can help bring in and train new ones and mentor, then we'll continue bringing people in.
Oh, okay, so somebody doesn't just come to one of your meetings and say, I am just so devoted that I am going to...
And I already have a habit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, save the habit for about 9 months. Yeah, it's a minimum, bare minimum, is a year to become a sister.
And what do they do? If somebody really is interested in becoming a sister, look for you at one of your events, or what?
Yeah, and in fact, I'm actually the Mistress of Novices. That's my responsibility is membership. And, you know, we're on Facebook, we're online, we're all over the place. And actually, on our website, there is a spot for, if you're interested in joining, contact the Mistress of Novices with the email. But it is a long process. Somebody does declare that they want to join. That's at least 2 months. They're not a member yet. They just hang out with us. They come to a couple of meetings, come to a couple of events, spend time. It's an interview. Yeah, they're aspirants. They're aspiring to be members. Next stage is postulants, minimum 4 months. And I say minimum because there are very few people who do it in the minimum amount of time, because it is very time-consuming. 4 months, 4 meetings, 4 events. Again, it's an interview process. It's the whole process up to becoming a fully professed sister is an interview. But it goes both ways. It's not a fit for everybody.
So you do have some Maria von Trapps.
Yeah.
That just can't cut it.
Right. And that's fine. We understand that. It's a big commitment. You're joining a worldwide sisterhood. And it's something you, once you're a sister for life. Unless you retire, you resign, or you are excommunicated. You're a sister for life. So we do take it very seriously. We do take vows at each level and each stage. Vows to our community and vows to each other. So,
so it's a full functioning order.
It is. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow.
And you don't have to fly in order to.
You don't have to. You can try, but yeah.
You don't.
We're not responsible for any injuries.
Tomorrow is World AIDS Day, and I do keep coming back to this. We keep straying.
Right.
What is your message for World AIDS Day? You're participating in all of the different events around the area, and what's your message to people for tomorrow?
Remember, and we're still fighting. Myself, I've been positive since '99, and it's still a fight. Every day, you know, you look at that handful of pills. Every day, you wake up and go, "Well, I made it again." Mm-hmm. And it's remembering those that fought that fight, and remembering that we still have a long ways to go.
Mm-hmm. Within your group, you have a number of people who are positive, some are negative. You have some who have partners who are negative and they're
right.
positive, or the other way around. You have some who are younger,
mm-hmm.
who haven't experienced what you have as far as loss.
Right.
How do you get that message across to people outside of your group?
That's a good question.
That's why we have such big heels. We yeah. beat it into them sometimes.
Sometimes, I mean, there have been times that, because we pass out bliss kits, which is a packet of condoms and lube, and we've had people take the lube out and say, "Well, I can use this," and throw the condom on the floor. I don't need that. You'll see a swarm of sisters immediately appear from wherever. And
is that what a group of nuns is called?
A
when
swarm.
They're together?
A swarm. Gaggle. You know, we've got a few names for it.
Yeah.
A station wagon of.
Yeah. and that's when the education really starts. And we'll have people standing around that are positive, are negative, are in those positive-negative relationships, and say, "Look, this is why we're still here. This is why we're still fighting." And, you know, usually they go away because we tried in the beginning not to be. We were like, "No, we're not going to go out there and be preachy." And there are people that need to be slapped down and preached at. They just do. They won't get the message otherwise. And so we will sit there face to face with them, a bunch of white-faced nuns, 7 feet tall, and, you know, this little 5'7" guy. You're gonna stay, and you're gonna listen, and they typically do, and they go away with an impression, if nothing else, and they'll remember a group of nuns next time they go to, you know, if they're not gonna use a condom, they'll suddenly have a flashback of nuns, and hopefully it's at least a trigger to think about it, you know, so.
Like an intervention on ignorance.
Right, yeah. I mean, we can't, we're not going to be there to put the condom on for you, but...
If asked, we would.
Well, but, yeah, it, you know, if you need assistance, just call. But, yeah, we don't, we will do whatever we can to spark something in them when that time comes.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Our guests today are Sister Bertha and Sister Ophelia from the DFW Sisters. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
KNON's Christmas Blues Party and CD release party for the new CD from the Silvertones, You Got Me Spinning. It's two parties in one as KNON has its first benefit event in the newly reopened Pearl. Come on out for the Silvertones playing tracks from their new CD, You Got Me Spinning. Opening the show will be two outstanding special guests, the John Ellis Band and Mr. Houston and the Icebreakers. We'll have free pork and red chili sauce, chicken and chili, and jalapeno tamales with two sides. That's Texas-sized 8-ounce tamales from La Victoria's of Dallas. Advance tickets only $6. Dinner and the show for only $6. Tickets are at KNON.org. Doors at 8 p.m. Music at 8:30. Pearl is located at 2038 Commerce in downtown Dallas. The Silvertones, the John Ellis Band, and Mr. Houston and the Icebreakers. Three bands and a meal. $6 in advance at KNON.org. We'll see you at the KNON Blues Party and Silvertones CD Release Party, Friday, December 9th at the Pearl. This is a KNON benefit event.
If you don't want your old SUV or other gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at KNON.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-KNON-AUTO.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Patty Fink. And we're talking to Sister Bertha and Sister Ophelia from the DFW Sisters. We're talking about World AIDS Day tomorrow. What is the importance of World AIDS Day at a time where there are medications that control this drug? And that's something, Ophelia, you were talking about. You take pills every day.
Mm-hmm. And deal with those side effects every day.
Well, let's talk about what are some of the side effects that you deal with every day, because there are so many young people who just think, well, it's okay, I'll just take a pill.
But, I mean, if you listen to any television whatsoever, you're going to hear an ad that spends more time telling you about these really awful side effects than, you know, and then I love the ones where it's maybe for depression or it's for something, a skin disorder or something, and then it says, may cause death.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
I mean, it's pretty serious stuff.
For depression pills that may cause depression.
Right.
Or suicide tendencies.
I mean, stuff is serious.
Yeah.
I mean, in the beginning, they were chemo drugs because it was, quote, a gay cancer.
So this is pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah. I mean, myself, I can, you know, go from wanting to eat seven times a day down to, when did I eat last and finally remember it was 3 days ago? And, I mean, intestinal distress, some days you just never know what's going to happen. insomnia. I mean, there's so many side effects. And if you try treating every one of those with another medication, you'd have to have a willpower for all those pills.
Right, and if you change one, you can take another one for its side effect, and then you're going to take another one for its side effect.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if young people ever really think that through.
No.
You know,
they don't.
I mean, clearly, because they would come to that conclusion pretty quickly.
Right. They think it's a one-pill-a-day solution, and they don't realize the amount of strains out there, the amount of pills you might not, the classifications that you might not be able to take. Plus the long-term side effects. 20 years of taking these pills, kidney failure, liver failure, I mean, you name it. People die from the side effects.
Right.
You know, and so it's just something that they don't think about. And it's something that we tend to point out, you know, that you're looking at a lifetime of medication.
My first cocktail when I moved to Texas caused a spike in my cholesterol. I had been in Dallas 45 minutes and had my first heart attack.
Wow.
And it's like, well, welcome to Texas. Thankfully, I am on that one pill once a day formula, and it's working wonderfully. My body has adjusted to it. I've been on it for 4 years now.
And to be fair, with all of the research and refinement in all these drugs, the drugs that we have now are a lot safer than the ones that originally came out in 1997.
Oh, absolutely. When you were given bottles of AZT and told, we don't know how much to tell you to take, and take 60 pills a day, you know, and that's what you did, not knowing what the effects were going to be and just hoping it worked.
Mm-hmm. And it did work for some people.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people now who've been alive for 20, 25 years with HIV, so apparently it worked for them. It's just that for every one of those, there was 100 other people.
And they were lucky enough to get through to a regimen that was actually beneficial.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But even now, the drugs that have come out the last few years, like you said, the one that you're on right now, Ophelia, the one that you're on right now is less toxic and easier to take than what you were on 5 years ago, which is great news.
Yeah.
Which is great news.
So we're talking about World AIDS Day. So there's going to be a lot of stuff, as every year, and certainly in recent times, and an increased number of events and increased locations all over the world where they happen. Do you see, when we look at that, we see Africa is an area where HIV and AIDS has really ballooned over the last 10, 15 years, in particular in recent years as well. So, there's a big shift in demographics around the world, and we see that here in Texas too, and in North Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing that in your events and who you talk to, and more people of color, maybe more more women?
We have actually, the African American community typically has been a very taboo subject, which is one reason it has spread as it has. We have recently going out or being seen around town, not in Cedar Springs or that area, but just being out in Oak Cliff, picking somebody up or whatever. I've had people walk by and ask, what in the world are y'all doing? What are you celebrating, or what's the occasion? And we tell them what we're about and what we do, and they suddenly are like, oh, thank you. This is it's very needed. And so it seems like, yes, there is kind of this waking up that is happening.
So you're saying, a little bit of more participation or interaction with communities of people of color, and
a little less denial, a little less of the looking away from the table if they're passing by. There's a little more interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, word's getting out. It's working.
Yeah, the first time I saw the sisters out, I was like, oh, really? But now that I see you around at lots of events, you're just part of the community.
Part of the community.
I can just picture you all getting on a DART rail train.
We've talked about it.
And riding around. That would be really interesting.
We would have to be very selective about the line, but yeah. I mean, we have talked about it.
Good point.
So, yeah.
Red Line into Oak Cliff would be very safe. Down into my neighborhood. Perfectly welcome. When people see the sisters out, you were talking about this a little bit earlier, they have sister moments, or you have sister moments, where people come up to you and just talk about different types of things. We talked about suicide. Some of the other things that people come up to you and talk about are homelessness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know you want to help and you want to be there for anybody who comes up to you for it. What do you do with something like that?
Again, whip out the little card of phone numbers and start dialing and seeing who we can get to pick up. Part of the problem, though, is not getting somebody to take them in. It's getting them to go. There are some that we've come across that they just want their hand out. They want their drink or whatever, or they want to just talk. And, that's fine. We'll sit there and we'll talk with them, and we'll offer them help, you know, offer them numbers and people to call, let them use our phones, or we'll use our phones and call. A lot of times they don't want that. They just want company and want to talk, and that's fine. So we'll do that too.
I would think somebody who comes up to you to talk about a drug problem, or a drinking problem, although a bar is probably not the best place to, but maybe that's where they're realizing
that's
that.
Exactly.
That's somebody who is ready for a change.
And I think a lot of times that comes out in the conversation. They'll come up about something else, but the deeper the conversation goes, the more they start looking at themselves and realizing, I have a problem. And so that's when the 15-minute conversation turns into a 2-hour conversation. And
That's not really something that you can prepare yourself for. So how did the sisters get into doing that kind of thing? And you said it was something that you had heard happened out in California in the other chapters, and you just weren't sure how that was going to happen here.
Thrown into it. People see us as, certain people will actually see us as nuns, which, you know, is hard to believe for some people who just see us as drag queens or clowns or whatever. People who are raised in Catholicism, a lot of times we'll see the nun aspect and will come up to us for confession or for something, just comfort. And so I think that, you know, that's where, I don't know, it's those people who see us as nuns who...
Well, I would think others see you, you know, because you were saying, I don't know why, but people just are attracted to us in a way, possibly because if I were to walk up to Patty, I would see her as, I've never said this before, an actual person.
Well, thank you. It's taken many years.
No, exactly.
Exactly.
But in the white face, you're in a mask, you're in a costume, you're portraying something.
Right, and they feel safer talking to somebody who they don't know who we are, and we possibly or probably don't know who they are.
And it's possible, too, that a lot of the rejection and you know, touching that place where they're really hitting those emotions comes from a past experience with a religion.
Exactly.
So maybe they are struggling, as many do in our community, with a need, a want, a love of the religion, religious tradition you were raised in or the one you want to be in, but perhaps that isn't a mutual feeling and that you had some rejection there that is very painful. And that maybe touches that place in people when they see you.
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
One other one that you mentioned before the show, and I was just scribbling down, and then we ran into the studio. You said somebody even talked to you about gang activity. Tell me about that.
It was interesting. It was another sister. He actually was married, but he was out at the bars and started talking to the sister. And what actually drew him was the clowns. He likes clowns. And so they started talking more and more, and it turns out he was a gang member who was looking to get out and change his life. He was also very, very drunk at the time, and started talking about substance abuse and alcohol abuse and all of that, and has since gotten help. And
so you actually
we will stay
follow.
In contact. Yeah.
Oh,
if,
okay.
If they give us their information, I mean, we all have business cards. We will give them our information. So it's up to them to get in contact with us. We don't want to pester them or bother them. But, yeah, if they give us their information, we'll keep in contact or, you know.
Well, and you're saying you don't want to pester or bother them, but when somebody comes up to you talking about suicide...
We do want to follow up, and we do. It just depends on the situation.
And certain things... You're not pestering them. It's, I'm not going to let you commit suicide.
Right. So, absolutely. Yeah.
But that's interesting with the gang activity, because how do you even prepare yourself to help somebody like that? It involves maybe some police intervention. It involves drug and alcohol.
Yeah,
intervention.
And that was one of those who he was looking for absolution and, mm-hmm. and you know forgiveness and all this and really what that sister did was get him in touch with an organization that could help.
Mm.
You know, mm. So that's kind of where that went, and he took the advice and he went with it. He was very sincere. He wanted to change his life. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
it is. I want to thank both of you for getting up at this wonderful hour. Sister Bertha, Sister Ophelia from the DFW Sisters, if you'd like to see them tomorrow, they'll be at a number of the World AIDS Day events downtown at 7 p.m. at Main Street Gardens over JPS in the afternoon over in Fort Worth. You're going to stop by the Resource Center sometime during the
lunch hour.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much for being here. And next week we'll be back. Abby Dees is our guest next week. She's in California. She's getting up at 5 a.m. to talk to us, but we'll be talking about Prop 8.
Okay.